Well, did you hear about the fellow who went to the doctor? He'd been feeling really bad, and the doctor ran a whole series of tests. And after some time, the doctor called him back, and he said, "We have the results of your test." He said, "I must tell you, I have good news and bad news. Which do you want to hear first?" And the fellow says, "Oh, man, Doc, I've been feeling so bad, I'm not sure I could take the bad news first. Give me the good news first." And the doctor said, "Well, the good news is," he said, "as a result of the test we've run, we have determined that you have 24 hours to live." The guy says, "24 hours to live?" He says, "That's the good news?" He said, "What's the bad news?" And the doctor said, "Well, I was supposed to have called you yesterday," he said. Good news and bad news. We're familiar with those kind of scenarios. Well, we've got a good news, bad news kind of scenario that we want to talk about today. And we want to talk about temptation. I have good news and bad news about that. And I want to start out with the bad news. The bad news, of course, is that we are surrounded by and living in a society that is just absolutely overcome with evil. There's wickedness on every hand. Moral corruption is all around us. Maybe as an indicator of just how bad it is, statistically they tell us there's something on the order of 1.5 million teenage pregnancies in America every year. Now that tells you how this wicked, corrupt society is affecting our young people, but all of us are facing temptation at every hand. That's the bad news. In fact, that is downright depressing news when you stop to think about it. We're facing terrible temptation. Now, the good news is that you can overcome this, that you can defeat temptation and sin, that you can live right even in the midst of a very wicked and corrupt world. And furthermore, not only is it possible to do so, but there are people who are. With God's help, there are people who are succeeding in living pure, moral, righteous lives. And that's what we want to talk about today. We want to talk about dealing with temptation, dealing with the temptations that come to us in our daily lives. You know, it really doesn't matter who you are or where you live or what school you attend or what job you have, whether you're rich or poor, or young or old. The fact of the matter is that you will face temptation. You're going to face temptation today and tomorrow and the next day and every day for as long as you live on this earth, you're going to be dealing with the problem of temptation. The question then is not, will you be tempted? The answer to that is obvious. The answer is yes, you will be tempted. The question is not will you be tempted, but rather how will you deal with that temptation? And so for a few moments this afternoon, we want to look at two Bible examples. And the fellows have passed out a handout to you that contains the Bible text that we'll be studying and a few notes there. You might want to scribble in some additional notes. We want to look at two fellows. One who did a miserable job and who failed terribly as he was faced with temptation. We look at his example. We can learn from people who set bad examples. We can learn not to do what they did, and that's what we're going to do initially. And then at the second part of the lesson, we'll be looking at a fellow who succeeded nobly to do what was right in service to God. We appreciate your presence here this afternoon very much. We're well aware of the fact that you could be doing other things, and you've chosen to come here, and we commend you for that. Our prayer is certainly that we will all be blessed by the time that we spend together. That certainly is one of our objectives. Our primary objective, of course, is that we offer honor and glory to the God of heaven, to whom we have come together to worship. We pray that He will be pleased with all that we do. If you have any questions about anything that I teach this week, if there's any questions, even to the point of disagreement, I hope that you'll bring those to my attention so that we can study together about that. This morning I said that if I could be of any service to you in any way, I'd be glad to do that if you'd let me know. I should have issued a disclaimer. The Horns have come to me and said they're moving this week and they wanted to know if I would help with that. And I should have said I would do anything short of moving household goods if I could do that. But I do hope that we can have a good week in the gospel meeting this week here at Eastside. Let's talk about dealing with temptation. And first of all, let's talk about a fellow who did everything wrong. The first text that we want to study comes from Proverbs chapter 7, and as I said, it is there on the paper that's been handed out to you. You can look in your own Bibles if you prefer. In the book of Proverbs at chapter 7, the author is writing as a father speaking to his son. And just a couple of verses that are not there on your page. The chapter starts out in Proverbs chapter 7, verse 1, "My son, keep my words and lay up my commandments with thee. Keep my commandments and live, and my law is the apple of thine eye." And so the writer is writing like a father speaking to his son, and he's giving him advice and instruction. And in that context, he speaks about this fella that he saw and observed who badly mishandled the temptations that came his way. Here in Proverbs chapter 7, beginning at verse 6, it says, "For at the window of my house I looked through my lattice and saw among the simple, I perceived among the youth, a man devoid of understanding." The first thing that I want to point out to you about this guy is that he did not use his head. He didn't think, and he was apparently unaware of the dangers that were around him. The New American Standard Version says he was devoid of knowledge, or rather lacking sense. He wasn't using his head. He just simply wasn't thinking about what was going on around him. Now, I want to tell you that is a major problem, and I think there are a lot of people who are imitating him today. We cannot be like that. We cannot go along through our daily routine unaware of the spiritual dangers that are surrounding us. We need to think. We need to be on guard. We need to use our heads. And so the first thing that he did wrong was to simply be unaware or lack perception concerning what was happening. That's a very dangerous thing. Well, then it says at verse 8 that passing along the street near her corner, and he took the path to her house. What he did next was that he went to the wrong place. The woman involved in this story had an apparent reputation. We'll speak more about that in a minute. But with her reputation being in place, he should have never have headed in the direction of her house. He went to the wrong place. He was in the wrong place and allowed himself to be tempted. Sometimes we sort of are alerted to the fact that we're in a dangerous situation. I remember a long time ago, a fella talked me into going spelunking with him. I don't know if you've ever done any of that cave exploring, but this fella talked me into it. He was very much into that sort of thing. And so one evening we went. And when we got to the place where the cave was, it was turning dark. Of course, it doesn't matter if it's daylight or dark if you're going in a cave. So we were going in there at nighttime. And as we were going in, you had to sort of get down and crawl through a narrow opening. And as we were going in, the bats were flying out of the cave, and that should have been a warning to me right there. This is not a very good place to be. But we went on in and went back in that cave for some long distance till we reached a place where big boulders had collapsed from the ceiling of the cave and were blocking the way. And we looked for several minutes there if there was a possible way beyond that cave-in to the other side. And suddenly it struck me. I'm here underneath these boulders that were perched above my head as big as an automobile. And it suddenly came to me, you know, there was some time in the past when this all came tumbling in. And that could happen again. And here I am under all of this. What am I doing here? Was my thought. A dangerous place. And I came scrambling out of there, and I haven't done any of that spelunking since. But sometimes we need to be aware, not just in physical danger, but very much in places of spiritual danger. We need to look up, look around and say, wait a minute, this is a bad place. I shouldn't even be in this place. This fellow went to the wrong place. Not only did he go to the wrong place, it was the wrong time. Notice at verse 10, "In the twilight, in the evening, in the black and dark night, and there a woman met him with the attire of a harlot and a crafty heart. She was loud and rebellious. Her feet would not stay at home. At times she was outside, at times in the open square." This morning we talked about a fella who was at the wrong place at the wrong time, an accident victim. And sometimes we do talk about accident victims that way. Wrong place, wrong time. This guy was at the wrong place and at the wrong time. But sadly, it was no accident. He actually was there on purpose. He chose to be there. He was there by design. And he wasn't exercising any caution whatsoever. And again, we would repeat that with all the spiritual dangers that exist in the world, we have to first be using our head, and then we have to avoid being at times and in places where people are doing evil things. That just makes sense. This fellow was not using his sense. Notice he chose to be with the wrong company. It says that, we already read verse 10 and through 12, that this woman met him, and we see something about the reputation she had. He went there at a time when she would be practicing her particular kind of sin, and she was the wrong company to be with. You know, young people need to learn the lesson that perhaps one of the most dangerous things that you can do is choose to be with the wrong crowd of people, to choose the wrong friends, to choose to be around people of an evil influence, to be in the wrong company. And that's exactly what this fella did. In 1 Corinthians chapter 15, verse 33, it says, "Bad company corrupts good morals." And that is a truth that has always been true. It was true back in Bible times, and it's still true today. And I suppose as long as time continues, it's going to be true as well, that bad company corrupts good morals. And so this fellow went at the time when this woman would be practicing her particular sin, and he went to be around her. She was bad company for him to be around. Then look at verses 13 through 15. "So she caught him and kissed him. With an impudent face, she said to him, 'I have peace offerings with me. Today I have paid my vows. So I came out to meet you diligently to seek your face, and I have found you.'" In the notes I have put that he listened to the wrong words. You notice what this woman tried to do here? She tried to make this fella feel as though he was special to her, that he was the only one that she was particularly interested in. Now, that was not the case. If her reputation was true, and of course we believe certainly that it was, then it was not true that she was looking just for that young man. But rather, she would have been looking for any man who would have been with her that night. And so she told him what he wanted to hear. Do you see that? That's exactly what she did. She told him what he wanted to hear. Here's the point that we could draw from that. When people are tempting us, when people are trying to convince us to engage in sinful activities, they will tell us what they think we want, what they think we want to hear. In other words, they're going to try to make it sound good. They're going to tell you whatever it takes to get you to engage in this sinful behavior. And so again, we need to wise up and get smart. It's clear that this woman intended to use the young man and then throw him away, but she told him what he wanted to hear. Notice there at verse 16, "I have spread my bed with tapestry, colored coverings of Egyptian linen. I have perfumed my bed with myrrh, aloes, and cinnamon. Come, let us take our fill of love until morning. Let us delight ourselves with love." The man fell for the wrong appeal. What he did, in a very real sense, was that he allowed his desire for temporary fleshly pleasure to cloud his view of what was right and proper. And so he traded permanent, eternal, spiritual things for a moment of fleshly gratification. He lost sight of what was most important. We should make the point here that sin does offer pleasure. In fact, in Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 25, it speaks about the pleasure of sin for a season. Sin is a pleasurable thing. We're not trying to ignore that. It's so. I think anybody who would suggest otherwise is just not simply dealing with reality. Sin offers pleasure, but it's a temporary thing. Sin is pleasurable. It's not like eating broccoli or something. Sin is real. I think Jeff made this point when he came to preach for us last fall in Columbia, that sin offers this pleasure. I think you might have used that expression. It's not like eating broccoli, Jeff. It's not. It's pleasurable. We understand it. But the pleasure of sin is short-lived. It's temporary. But spiritual things, the will of God and doing His service, offers not only the best in this life, but for eternity as well. And so we've got to be aware of that, that there's an appeal of sin, but it's the wrong appeal. And then notice in verse 19, she said, "For my husband is not at home. He has gone on a long journey. He has taken a bag of money with him and will come home on the appointed day." Here, he fell for an old lie. You know what that old lie is? I was told that. I have been told that. You may have been told that as well. Young people, perhaps you have especially been told this lie, and the lie is a very simple one. No one will ever know. Isn't that the lie that is told? We can do this, and no one will ever find out. I wonder how many times that lie has been repeated. Come on, commit this sin. Join in with us in doing this, and no one will ever know. If you think about that for a minute, it is an obvious lie. Because if you choose to do what you're being tempted to do, several people will know. The one who, at least the person who's tempting us will know if they succeed in getting us to sin. We will know, and we'll have to deal with the guilty conscience of that sin. But certainly the God of heaven will know. In Hebrews chapter 4 and verse 13, it says, all things are naked and open unto the eyes of Him with whom we have to do. It's a lie, for sure, that no one will ever know. And we need to realize that. This fellow fell for that lie. And so what happened? It says in verse 21, with her enticing speech she caused him to yield. With her flattering lips she seduced him. Immediately he went after her as an ox goes to the slaughter or as a fool to the correction of the stocks, till an arrow struck his liver. As a bird hastens to the snare, he did not know it would take his life. And so he falls. Now, let me ask you a question about this. As you have read that text and see the progression of things that happen, started out with him not using his head, going to the wrong place at the wrong time to be with the wrong company, listening to the wrong words, seeking the wrong things, the wrong appeal, listening to that lie. As you look at the progression here, let me ask you this question. Are you surprised at how this story turns out? Well, no. There's really no surprise at all, is there? This fellow was doing everything wrong. He was going headlong into this thing. It is not surprising at the end that he commits sin. The sin of this text, of course, is the sin of sexual immorality, but it could have been drugs or drinking or smoking or stealing or you name the sin. That's the way temptation works that leads us into sin. Now, as I said, we can learn from this fellow. Certainly not to imitate him, but actually to avoid doing what he did. He did everything wrong. We could learn not to do what he did. Well, that's the bad example. A lot of people in the world today are following that very same methodology. But let me suggest to you again that that is not inevitable. It does not have to be that way. That it's possible to resist temptation. And what we want to do on the back of your page is look at a fellow who handled temptation the right way. And he was successful in dealing with it. Again, this is the good news, that failure is not inevitable, and with God's help we can overcome temptation. And so we look at the example of a young man who did right. This is the very familiar Bible story of Joseph, taken from Genesis chapter 39, beginning at verse 6. Just a little bit of background to remind us, the story of Joseph, of course, was that he was one of 12 sons of his father. And he was the favorite son of his father. Seems that his father had made a very bad mistake in showing, very obviously showing his preference for Joseph. And so his other brothers envied him. When they had the opportunity one day as they were out in the field, they caught him and almost would have murdered him, but ultimately ended up selling him to slave traders who took him to Egypt. And he ended up there in the house of a man named Potiphar as a slave. Now, he was not very old. I think the Bible would bear out that when he was sold by his brothers, he was 17 years old. Now, when this part of the story that we're going to study today happens, we don't know how much later it was, but I think the Bible implies that it probably wasn't too much later. And so it wouldn't be hard to imagine Joseph here as a man perhaps in his early 20s. So you think of him facing the temptation he was facing. He was a young man. Notice it says here in Genesis chapter 39, verse 6, so he, Potiphar, left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he did not know what he had except for the bread which he ate, and Joseph was handsome in form and appearance. Now it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast longing eyes on Joseph, and she said, lie with me. The first thing that I would point out about Joseph is that, as we said, he was a young man, and I believe that he would have therefore had the normal physical attractions of such a young man. He was a personally handsome fella. And in addition to just the normal desires, it might have been that Joseph could have thought, I might work this to my advantage. If I can gain the favor of my master's wife, maybe, just maybe, it will be able to result in my freedom from this slavery situation. I don't know, the Bible doesn't say that, but you might imagine that those kind of thoughts would have been in his mind also. But the first thing to point out about him is I think that he was susceptible to temptation and was aware of that, apparently realizes the danger. And so he acts accordingly. As we read on in verse 8, he refused and said to his master's wife, "Look, my master does not know what is with me in the house, and he has committed all that he has to my hand. There is no one greater in this house than I, nor has he kept back anything from me but you, because you are his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" I think it's important to notice, very important to notice, that he resists from the very start. He doesn't even contemplate. He doesn't even begin to go in that direction of committing this sin. And I think this is so important. To our young people, we would particularly encourage you to remember this. Don't even start down the road towards sin. It is a great mistake, a huge mistake, when people have the idea, well, I'm going to go along with this. I'll start down that way, but if anything goes wrong, I'll leave, I'll get out. For instance, it may be, young people, that you know this certain group of other young people. You know their reputation. You know the things that they often do and the evil deeds that they are involved in. And so, some evening you think about going with them. And I've actually heard young people who would express it this way: "I'm going to go with them." And they already know, they fully know the reputation of this group of people. "But I'm going to go with them, but if anything bad starts to happen, I'll get out of there." Well, that's just a recipe for failure. To start in that direction, to begin to go that way. In the case of Joseph, we see that he never did that. He didn't even start down the road toward this sin. I think it's especially important for us to remember, and we were stressing this in our lesson last night to the young people, that he never forgot his relationship with God. It was very important to him that he not sin against God. And I believe that we all need to remember constantly that as we are tempted, that we have to be strong against temptation, because to fail is to sin against God, the God of heaven, who loves us so much. Joseph never forgot that, and it's clear that he used that as a tool to help him in dealing with temptation. In verse 10 it says, "So it was, as she spoke to Joseph day by day, that he did not heed her to lie with her or to be with her." I want to make a couple of points from this. First of all, stress that he did not heed her. That is, he didn't listen to what she was saying. It's my guess that Potiphar's wife could use very subtle arguments to try and make it sound as though this was the right thing to do, the best thing for Joseph to do. But notice that it says he did not heed her. He didn't listen to the words that she was saying. He would not pay attention to her enticing words. He didn't heed her. And then I think also that we could say that he avoided being in her presence as much as possible. Notice he did not heed her to lie with her or to be with her. And I understand that the Bible expression "to be with her" sometimes is an expression to denote the sexual relationship. But I want to generalize that at some point. It's my thinking that Joseph would have made every effort to not even be around her in so much as that was possible, considering his situation and his responsibility. I think, young people, you need to make some such determinations as that. When you know that there are some people who are not morally right and they're not trying to live as they should, that you certainly shouldn't listen to them as they entice to sin. But furthermore, you need to make some absolute decisions and say, "I'm not going to be around those people. I'm making a decision and a commitment that I'm not going to spend time around those people, because that's what they do. And that is the result of being with them. And I know that. And based upon what I know of them and their reputation, I simply make a decision not to be with those people." Now, Joseph made that kind of determination, and he's commendable for doing that. Notice in verse 10 that the temptation of Potiphar's wife was not just a one-time proposition, but in fact she came back to him again and again, day by day. That is the nature of temptation. Temptation is there today and tomorrow and the next day. It comes back again and again and again. We have to be strong over and over and over again against temptation, because we're never done dealing with it. But then finally notice in verse 11, it happened about this time when Joseph went into the house to do his work and none of the men of the house was inside, that she caught him by his garment, saying, "Lie with me." But he left his garment in her hand and fled and ran outside. Now, this is as far in the study as we're going to go with Joseph. You remember, of course, a little bit of what happened beyond this. Now he has told her no one time too many, and now she's angry about it. In fact, when her husband comes home, she places a false charge against Joseph, doesn't she? When her husband comes home, she basically says, Joseph came in here and tried to rape me. And I have the proof of it. I have here his coat. This is his coat, is it not? And that's proof that he did what I'm saying that he did. And so without any further investigation whatsoever, Joseph was thrown in prison and he languished there in an unjust and unfair way for a long time. But the thing that we want to draw from this is what he did. In the moment of greatest temptation, what did he do? He actually fled. He ran away. In fact, he was so intent on getting out of that situation that in order to get away from this woman, he had to actually shed his coat and leave it behind. As she latched onto him, he actually got out of his coat and ran out of the house in order to avoid committing the sin that she was trying to get him to commit with her. I don't know what words the young people use these days. I know when I was a kid, what we would do when we were trying to taunt someone is we'd call them a chicken. Some of you all will remember how we used to do that. What's the matter? Are you a chicken? Why won't you do this? Are you afraid? Are you a chicken? I remember we had a tree in the neighborhood where we lived, and we climbed in that tree a lot. And there was one particular limb high up in that tree. And we'd climb up that tree and then dare one another to jump out of the tree from that limb. And if you were hesitant at all to make that jump, the others would say, what's the matter? Are you a chicken? Well, that's what people sometimes do to us when they're tempting us to sin. What's the matter? You? Now again, I don't know the word the kids use these days. They probably don't use the word chicken. But are you afraid? Are you afraid to do this? What's the matter with you? I want to tell you that if you are willing to resist temptation, even to the point of fleeing away from a dangerous spiritual situation, you're no chicken, you're no coward. In fact, I think you're showing great moral courage. The Scriptures urge us to flee from temptation and sin, 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 22. And if you reach that point where the only way to avoid sin is to actually run, physically run away from the situation, then I think you're doing what Joseph did, and you would be commended in the doing of it. Now, let me ask you another question. At the end of this story, are you surprised at the outcome? Joseph does not sin, right? He does not commit the sin that Potiphar's wife has been encouraging him to commit. And I ask you the question, are you surprised at that outcome? Well, the answer is no, we're not surprised at all, are we? Because Joseph was doing the right thing from the beginning, right along, at every step of the way, he was making right decisions and taking correct actions to be able to avoid the temptation and the sin that would follow. And he sets a noble example for us. Now again, in his case, the sin was that temptation was for the sin of sexual immorality. Yet he did not fall in sin because he made every right step. Now, here's the sort of interactive part of our lesson tonight. If you have been wonder why the preacher printed up this page in such a peculiar-looking fashion, here's what I want you to do. If you look at your paper this way, and if you fold the right hand of the page over to those arrows, what you end up is with a page that looks sort of like that, and you've got two columns that contrast the actions of these two different individuals. The one was the wrong way, and the other was the right way. But what's interesting to me is that you can parallel these two stories so nicely. And at every point where the fellow in Proverbs 7 was doing the wrong thing, Joseph was doing the right. Notice, the man in Proverbs did not think. But Joseph apparently knew he was susceptible and kept himself from sin. That fellow went to the wrong place at the wrong time. Joseph resisted from the start. That man chose the wrong company. Joseph avoided her. That man listened to the wrong words. Joseph did not listen to Potiphar's wife. And when that man in Proverbs 7 fell for the wrong appeal and the old lie, Joseph, on the other hand, fled from temptation. And you are then not surprised that the outcomes of the two stories are just the opposite of one another. The one fellow sinned and the other did not. Now, there's a lesson to be learned, obviously, from the good example of Joseph. As we were saying earlier, we can learn from the negative example of that first individual. We can certainly learn from the powerful example, the good example that Joseph gives us. And so back to what we said at the outset, temptation is a reality. You're going to deal with it. Today, tomorrow, the next day, and for as long as you live, you're going to be in a world of temptation, and you're going to have to deal with it. The question is not, will it happen? It will. The question is, how will you deal with it? And we encourage you to make the right decisions. Jesus encouraged us in Matthew chapter 6 at verse 13 that when we pray, we should pray for strength in the face of temptation. That's certainly a worthy thing to do. And then we know, of course, that God has promised in 1 Corinthians chapter 10 and verse 13, where it says, there's no temptation taken you, but such as is common to man. But God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that you're able, but will with the temptation also make a way to escape that you may be able to bear it. Those are great promises, and it gives us hope that we can also succeed in dealing with temptation. I hope we've said something this afternoon that's been helpful, that will encourage us as we try to live day by day doing the will of God. As we bring the lesson to a close and as we're about to sing this song of invitation, we would ask you to consider your own situation and to evaluate your standing with God at this moment in time. It may be that someone needs to obey the gospel. Someone here perhaps has been thinking about their need to make their life right with God. You've never become a Christian. You never obeyed the gospel plan of salvation. And if that's the case, we would encourage you to make that decision without any further delay. If you know the truth, if you know what you need to do, we're ready to assist you in your obedience. You just let us know. Upon hearing God's truth, believe it. Repent of your sins. Confess your faith in Jesus and be baptized for the remission of sins. If you're a Christian already, but you know that you've not been living the kind of life that a Christian should live, we urge you to come back in repentance, confession, and prayer. If we can help in any way, let us know while we stand and sing this song.